This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. After a stunning defeat in the Republican primary in Virginia, House Majority Leader Eric Cantor made this announcement.
Now, while I intend to serve out my term as a member of Congress from the 7th District of Virginia, effective July 31st, I will be stepping down as Majority Leader.
Wow, what does that defeat tell us about the status of the GOP? Joining us to talk about that question and much more is political junkie Ken Rudin. Welcome back, Ken.
Thank you, Frank.
Tell us a little bit about that 7th district in Virginia and the man who beat Eric Cantor.
Well, I mean, it's days later, but it's still an unbelievable shock. Nobody saw it was coming, including Eric Cantor. It's the first time in history a House Majority Leader was defeated in his own primary. I mean, we love history when we talk about politics, but this is a big one. And the guy who beat him, Dave Brat, he really didn't have much money. Maybe he spent $100,000, maybe $200,000. Although I think he did have money because I read somewhere that Dave Brat had a political action committee backed by Rob Lowe and Molly Ringwald. You know about this?
No.
This Brat pack. Yes. it's been all the pit. Yeah. I thought I'd try that joke.
Try it again, maybe next week. No. Keep going, though. You're doing great. You're doing great.
Okay. No, but the point is that nobody – what happened is Brat not only talked about Eric Cantor's support for amnesty regarding immigration and opening the borders, but more importantly, Eric Cantor saw himself as the next Speaker of the House, assuming that John Boehner would eventually leave. And he was focusing more on his national reputation and ignoring a lot of folks back home in the 7th Congressional District in Virginia.
So that it may have more because I've seen a lot of speculation, you know, was it the Tea Party? Well, it doesn't seem that the Tea Party was very active in this race. Was it perhaps anti-Semitism? Again, I've seen that Cantor won once. So how much of this other speculation do you think is actually Tea Party anti-Semitism played a part in this?
Well, he's been there 7 terms. If we're going to talk about anti-Semitism, right, we may have seen it before.
That's
that.
Right.
So I think I kind of dismiss that. And as far as the Tea Party, I mean, we talk about how they spent all this money to beat Mitch McConnell, and they tried to beat Lindsey Graham in South Carolina. And, of course, they're spending a fortune trying to beat Thad Cochran in Mississippi. But this was really completely under the radar. The only people who paid attention to Dave Brat were like talk show hosts like Laura Ingraham and local Tea Party activists. But the national groups never saw it coming, never saw it on their radar, and never put in any money on the campaign.
Is this really a Dave Brat quote? All of the investment banks up in New York and D.C., they should have gone to jail? Is that what he said? I saw that
well,
quote.
Well, you know, see, it's interesting. He, on his election night, on Tuesday night, winning the primary, he said the problem with Eric Cantor and the problem with the Republican Party and the problem with both parties is that they care far more about Wall Street than they do Main Street. And, you know, if I weren't mistaken, that sounds exactly what Elizabeth Warren would say.
Exactly.
So it's kind of interesting to see Dave Brat and Elizabeth Warren and the progressive left use the same kind of rhetoric.
So is there any way that the Tea Party figures into this? Can they claim victory? Is this any way a reflection of what had been a pretty serious divide between mainstream and Tea Party Republicans?
Well, I don't know if they could claim victory because they are not responsible for it, but they're certainly happy with it. Chris McDaniel, the Tea Party candidate who's running for the Senate in Mississippi against Thad Cochran, that runoff is June 24th. He said, we won where we did it. So Tea Party folks around the country have reason to celebrate because Eric Cantor, even though he is very conservative, and I think far more conservative than Speaker John Boehner, but he was part of the establishment. He was part of the leadership. And he was part of a group that was talking about overhaul immigration and move, you know, and the leadership was not crazy about shutting down the government. And the Tea Party said, this is not what we believe in.
And Democrats may have reason to celebrate. They can once again sort of play this tune that the Republican Party is falling apart and divided. Now, Cantor, for his part, tried to reiterate that the Republican Party is, in fact, united.
Truly what divides Republicans pales in comparison to what divides us as conservatives from the left and their Democratic Party.
All right, Ken, clearly not a Tea Party candidate. He called it the Democratic Party, not the Democrat Party. So out of touch with the right. Out of touch with the right, clearly. But is he right?
No, well, here's the thing. I mean, yes, the Democrats are excited. They're jumping up and down. We got rid of one of our big nemesis, Eric Cantor. But ultimately, if the Republican Congress was going to work any kind of deals with President Obama on immigration, although that remains to be seen if that was going to happen, but if there was going to be any kind of working together with President Obama, that really hurt with Cantor's defeat. Now members of the Republican conference will look at each other and say, well, wait a second, it's a tremendous risk if we talk across the aisle, if we talk to our Democratic colleagues, because if we do, there could be a Dave Brat waiting in the wings for us in the primary.
And so this suggests that any move toward bipartisanship could be fatal if you're a Republican.
Well, there was not much bipartisanship prior to Tuesday, but I suspect there'll be much less of it in the months and weeks and months to come.
So, what does this mean for any hope for immigration reform? Is it dead?
Yes, I think so.
We have our answer.
But remember when President Obama went around Congress to do that deal to release Bo Bergdahl and trade him for the Taliban commanders, and Republicans said, "Well, you know, we can't trust President Obama anymore. If he's going to do this with Bergdahl, if he's going to do this with carbon emissions, then maybe we can't work out a deal on immigration after all. Oh, please, give me a break." There was no deal in the workings to begin with because John Boehner knew his conference, his members, were scared to death of any way of being portrayed as the A word, the amnesty word, and Eric Cantor proved that. I'm not saying that immigration is what defeated Eric Cantor, but it certainly was one of the factors.
So is there anything, is there any reflection at all in what happened up in Virginia, down here in North Carolina politics? Is there any way we can see what's happening here reflected in that upset?
I don't think so. I mean, of course, you know, the North Carolina primary was still to come, and then maybe it could have emboldened the Greg Brannons of the world and the Tea Party folks of the world, and maybe Tom Tillis would have had a tougher time with it. But I think not. I think right now the feeling is, and we saw this in the bid to succeed Eric Cantor as majority leader. We thought that there would be 15 different candidates getting involved in that race, and now it looks like it's going to be only one guy, the whip, Kevin McCarthy. So if the Republicans realize they can coalesce in order to claim victory on Capitol Hill for the leadership, perhaps the Republicans in North Carolina say the only way to, you know, stay united is to work behind Tillis to defeat Kay Hagan.
We take great pride here in North Carolina in not looking like our neighbors to the north. You know, we are this valley of humility between two mountains of conceit.
I wasn't aware of that. No, but I know everybody does. Everybody does say, thank God for Mississippi. I don't know what that means, but everybody does say that.
North Carolina more and more. Well, let's talk about North Carolina and the legislature that has been working on a budget this week in the short session. The House just passed its version. They are led in the House by Tom Tillis, who is also running for Senate to unseat U.S. Senator Kay Hagan. And the big effort this week was to pass that budget. How are things working out, would you say, for Tillis?
Well, here's the problem. I mean, it's not just endemic to Tom Tillis. We saw this with Bob Dole when he was running for president in 1996. It's a very tough high wire act to, one, run a legislature, Tillis being the Speaker of the House and Bob Dole being the majority leader in the Senate back in 96. But you have to both satisfy your more conservative members in the state legislature, at the same time trying to win over centrist voters, independent voters, in running for the Senate. And that's difficult. It's very difficult. So perhaps Tillis may sound even less conservative than he may have a year or two ago when he was pushing through one of the more conservative programs and platforms in any state legislature in the country, perhaps the most conservative in North Carolina history.
There are some big differences between that Senate and House proposal. Do you think in some ways those differences were perhaps created by the fact that the Speaker is running for Senate and trying to reach that middle ground?
Well, there is tremendous pressure on many Republican legislators in North Carolina to say, look, there are differences. We know that there are ideological splits that are not going to be satisfied or resolved by this campaign. But at the same time, we can't let us be the headlines. We can't let people know that Republican divisions is the story when the story should be we're uniting behind Tom Tillis in the Senate race.
How about the time spent away? I mean, it does take a fair amount of time, and this legislative session isn't over yet. What does that do to Tillis's fundraising opportunities?
Well, I mean, the point is, look, there's no question that Tom Tillis is going to be completely well-funded in his race. More money, as we've said over and over again on your show, that more money has gone into the North Carolina Senate race than any other Senate race in the country. Perhaps it's because North Carolina is one of the biggest states in the country with a competitive Senate race. But there is so much money coming in for Tom Tillis, either directly on his behalf or subterraneously, if that's a word. Actually, it's not a word.
It is now, right?
I just checked. But on his behalf. So I mean, as a state legislator, as the leader of a state legislator, it's always easy and a well-plotted path to raise money. But right now, Tom Tillis has nothing to worry about at the financial part of it.
Hashtag sub to what? That's going out now.
No, I'll look it up. I'll look it up after the show.
Ken, thanks so much. Always a pleasure.
Thanks.
Ken Rudin, the political junkie. You can find a link to his scuttle button puzzle on our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, Ken stays with us. We're going to talk with two former mayors about the way we draw our district lines. Is gerrymandering a thing of the past? Can it be? Is there any such thing as nonpartisan district making? We'll talk about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.